WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Happy Monday and happy Martin Luther King Day, folks. I'm sure many of you have the day off and are enjoying Current Sports as we pump through your speakers to start your week. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a fun-filled and reflective show for you as we take a look at the weekend that was in sports and chat about the MSU men's and women's basketball teams as both, yes, both fall over the weekend. We'll also talk about one thrilling game in the NFL. I mean, it had everybody talking, including us here on the show today. Seattle and New England now in the Super Bowl. Max Scherzer heading to the Nets. Weekend winners and so much more. But to start the show, let's start like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners brought to you by the one, the only, Madeline Carino.
This is Madeline Carino, and here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this January 19th. The MSU men's and women's basketball team both suffered tough losses this weekend. The women's team held number 2 Iowa last night, who averaged almost 80 points a game, but lost in the final minutes 52-50. Maryland swept the men's team 75-59 on Saturday. Michigan junior guard Karis LeVert injured his left foot Saturday against Northwestern. He is scheduled for surgery this week and will miss the remainder of the season. LeVert has started the last 55 games and was the team leader in scoring, rebounds, assists, steals, and minutes. MSU women's gymnastics had a record-breaking weekend in Iowa City, coming home with the win and 10 career highs. MSU took first place in the tri-meet against Iowa and Ball State with a season best score of 195.625. They won the team score for beam and vault and individual wins on vault, beam, floor, and the all-around. Max Scherzer has agreed to a 7-year contract with the Washington Nationals. The offer is reportedly $210 million with half deferred. Detroit offered Scherzer a contract this past March and would have paid him $144 million the 2015-2020, which he declined. Seattle overcame a 16-0 halftime deficit to beat Green Bay in overtime 28-22, and New England dominated the Indianapolis Colts 45-7 to set up one of the most anticipated Super Bowl showdowns in recent memory. The NFL is investigating whether the New England Patriots intentionally deflated footballs during Saturday's AFC Championship win over the Indianapolis Colts. On the first offensive play from scrimmage in the third quarter, referee Walt Anderson briefly stopped play to replace a ball, which could have been related to this issue. Prior to Sunday, Glover Quinn was the only Detroit Lion scheduled to make an appearance in the NFL's Pro Bowl. With Ndamukong Suh and Calvin Johnson declining invitations, quarterback Matthew Stafford and wide receiver Golden Tate earned an invitation and will make their Pro Bowl debuts at University of Phoenix Stadium next Sunday. It's the first time the Lions have had 5 Pro Bowl players since the year 2000. The Denver Broncos announced today that Gary Kubiak has agreed to become the team's new head coach. Kubiak spent the past season as offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, and prior to that, he spent 8 seasons as head coach for the Houston Texans. And those are your current sports quick hit headliners. I'm Madeline Carino. Phone lines are open.
I have a dream. My 4 little children
Yes, happy MLK Day, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, that is probably his most famous speech, the I Have a Dream speech from Martin Luther King Jr. Still powerful to this day, no matter how many times you hear it, folks. Hopefully you all are having a great MLK Day. You know, this is one of those days I certainly like to reflect on my own life and, you know, my progression as a person. Because I tell you what better example of humanity than MLK? You know, I would not be here right now if it wasn't for the man. He cracked open so many doors in fighting for equality, in fighting for freedom, and just fighting. You know, one of the most touching moments I've ever had in a movie theater happened to be a week and a half ago, actually watching the movie Selma. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but if you haven't, it is one unbelievable piece of theatric work, folks. It recounts, actually, the incredible march in Selma, probably Dr. King's most famous march, and just the trials and tribulations that he had to endure during those times. Really remarkable story. Oprah Winfrey is also in it. The rapper Common is in it. I mean, just an incredible cast of individuals. And again, you know, after that movie and the credits started to roll, I mean, again, it's one of those movies that really make you appreciate those who made certain sacrifices for all of us here to live a better life. So on this day, don't forget what Dr. King stood for. And just don't forget to be a better person or try to be a better person each and every day you are on this earth. Happy MLK Day, folks. All right, folks. Well, we have a great show today, a packed current sports show, as each and every Monday is. We try to recap everything, or at least as much as we can, that took place over the weekend action. How about that Seattle Seahawks and Green Bay Packers game? You know, I seen the highlights. Now, I didn't actually watch the game live because I was actually at the Breslin Center covering the Michigan State women's basketball game as they took on Iowa. But I tell you what, myself, Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal, Audrey Dahlgren of WLNS TV6, I mean, during that entire game, we're sitting there glued to our phones, keeping track of what was taking place in that second half, and we just could not believe that the Seattle Seahawks had pulled out that win. An unbelievable game, one of the craziest conference championship games in NFL history. But what a moment for Seattle, proving that they certainly have the heart of a champion, to say the least. Unbelievable moment. We'll talk about that. We'll also be diving into the other blowout game that was New England and Indianapolis, as you just heard from Madeline. And we'll have so much more, folks. But I want to start today's show by talking about the MSU men's basketball team. Now, Tom Izzo and company had a rough weekend. It's been such a rough season for this squad. Looking at, again, a chance for really redemption against a Maryland team that, if you remember, to start Big Ten play, was able to come out and get the W over Tom Izzo and the Spartans. But Maryland swept the men's team in this series for this year, 75-59, the final of that game on Saturday. Now, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when you look at this squad, one of the biggest questions that I've always harped on when looking at how they started this year was, when the three-point shot doesn't fall, what is the plan B? I believe that was even one of our current sports questions of the day last week. When Tom Izzo's team is not banking it from deep, what do they turn to? And you saw what happened in that game against Maryland, where you had that ideal situation. The three-point shot didn't fall, and Michigan State had no plan B, to be honest with you. To break down some of these stats, Maryland, they sink 11 three-pointers. Michigan State went 3-for-17 from behind the arc. And, you know, it kind of makes you wonder now. Now, I didn't want to, again, this is still a year in which, you know, Michigan State can turn things around. This is still a Tom Izzo coach team that doesn't start peaking until March comes, right at the right time. Things could take a 180 here But what I'm seeing right now does not allude to any of that taking place anytime soon. Now, again, they do play a team in Penn State, a team that is not great in the Big Ten. They haven't been – they're not really impressive. The Nittany Lions are certainly reeling, to say the least. But there are a lot of holes in this team that have to be plugged. Or Michigan State, again, could end up in a bad situation. Another question for me is Travis Trice. Travis Trice went 2 of 8 for the game, and I ideally think when looking at that game on Saturday that he was sort of taken out of his mojo by Melo Trimble. I mean, Melo Trimble was fantastic throughout that game. He went 8 for 16, had 24 points, 6 for 11 from three-point land. So it's kind of like Michigan State kind of got a taste of his own medicine in that game. And you look at how close that initial game between the Spartans and Maryland was when they first played. You know, you just felt as though Michigan State only had to make a few more adjustments. It's now further in the year now in the Big Ten season. Michigan State has fine-tuned some things. They get that early week bye. They're going to come in this game very healthy and focused. And that simply is not what we saw. What do you think about the Michigan State men's basketball team? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to invite the man behind the glass now to Current Sports. Alex Sharg, happy MLK Day, my man.
Happy MLK Day, man. And yeah, I did catch that game with the Packers and the Seattle Seahawks. And it's funny, I'm sure you're about to allude to this, but Tom Izzo had quite something to say about some of his favorite and least favorite moments from the weekend involving that game.
Yeah, he definitely did, and he had a kind of a funny reference to that. Yeah, why not? Let's hear a quote from Tom Izzo today. Yeah, of course, he held his weekly presser this morning at the Breslin Center. Here's what he had to say.
And the last bit of good news is, you know, I don't coach the Green Bay Packers. So that's real good news after watching that game and realizing how, doesn't matter if you're in high school, college, or pro, people make mistakes. The bad is I wasn't happy with the way we played in Maryland. You know, the unexcusable missed layups, the fact that I didn't think our guards played very well offensively or defensively. But as I said then, and after watching the film, there's a lot of reasons, but Maryland played good. I mean, they shot the ball extremely well from the three and from the free throw line, and we shot the ball better than we did here, even missing all those layups. We rebounded the ball better than we did here. We did not defend the three and give them some credit that they hit a couple of wild ones, but I thought we didn't play maybe with the same energy that I thought we'd play after a week off, after some good practices, and I don't have a good reason for that. So something we'll work on.
You know, Alex, I always talk about panic meters on this show. Where exactly is my panic meter in regards to variances of amounts of teams? It started with our conversation of the Detroit Tigers this past season, and I want to relate that now to this situation with the MSU men's basketball team. I do think that this is a situation that deservingly so has brought about a lot of negative attention, because right now, Alex, I'm going to be frank with you, this team right now with the way they're playing is not up to par with some of the best teams in the conference, let alone the nation. There's a lot of glaring situations on this team that have to be plugged again in order for Tom Izzo to turn this thing around. He's got a tall order. He's got a tall order right now. And, you know, another thing with this whole thing that Tom Izzo also talked about, which I found very, very funny in today's presser, when talking about from the free throw line. You know, their percentage of made free throws from the free throw line have been just horrid. Maryland actually went 20 of 22 at the free throw line, while Michigan State was 4 for 13. Folks, Michigan State actually is the worst free throw shooting team in the Big Ten. And I frankly think, when looking at those numbers, I think that Michigan State isn't getting to the line as much as they should be, as frequently as they should be, because I think they're, again, and indeed, it's not like I feel like I'm preaching to the choir every time I talk about this Michigan State men's basketball team, because they are the same problems that are protruding game in and game out. We've talked about Michigan State not hitting from the free throw line. We've talked about the lack of penetration. We've talked about them relying on the three-point line. We've talked about them becoming a stagnant and confused team when it comes to their half-court offense. We've talked about all this before, and it's exactly what we saw on Saturday against Maryland.
So where's the panic meter?
If I had to put a number on out of 10, I'm putting it at an 8 right now.
Wow.
I will put it at an 8 right now.
All right, young boy. Let me calm you down.
Go ahead.
First of all, I got to say this. It's their second loss in Big Ten play, and it's against the same team that they've been losing to. So the first loss is at Maryland by 2 points. The second loss, yeah, it's a little bit of a blowout.
A little bit?
It was a blowout. I can understand that there's a bit of concern for you. But at the same time, it's only the second loss in the Big Ten Conference. They have 3 other wins. It's still very early in the year. And aside from that, Al, how about the fact that, yeah, you know, free throw is a concern. But Tom Izzo said this. He said, offensively, they're better than I thought. Defensively, they're better than I thought. Free throw, yes, they're worse than I thought. Rebounding, they're just as good, if not maybe a little bit worse than I thought. So overall, he's still pleased offensively and defensively on both sides of the ball. It's the free throw shooting and maybe a little bit of crashing the boards a little bit harder. This is what Tom Izzo noted last week, you know, overall in the season so far. I think, like Tom Izzo said, let's wait till February until we bring any panic meter up. Albeit maybe an 8 on the scale, I'd put it maybe at least a 2 or a 3, Al.
Whoa, my gosh. So there is no panic meter for you.
No,
for me, Alex, you know, I feel like we've been saying this for a while now. And after a while, I feel like we've been playing the same tune over and over and over. We say, okay, it's still early. Next game, they lose. Okay, it's still early. Next game, they struggle.
Next game, they lose.
Next game, second loss. Well, look at the schedule right now. I'm talking about overall. Second loss in the conference. Now, mind you, the Big Ten conference schedule is still in its infancy. They still have a lot of teams to play within conference. Again, they play Penn State at home on the 21st this week. Then you go at Nebraska on the road. You play Rutgers. You play a Michigan team that's pretty much dead, so I think you can mark that as a win right now. You play Illinois. It's still early in the Big Ten, but looking at what we've seen right now, again, Alex, this team is 12-6 overall. And when they've played a formidable team, they've struggled, period. When they've played a team that's decent to great, they've lost. They've handled business against the Cupcakes. But what concerns me as the year goes on is when they play teams that challenge them, it seems like they become like a roly-poly and crawl up into a ball. And they do not – you don't see that efficiency. You don't see that focus from them. And, again, the same problems keep popping up for this team. And if you're a Michigan State men's basketball fan out there, if you're constantly seeing the same problems pop up, there is another problem here that, again, alludes to what's going on in practice. I don't know what's going on in practice. And it's funny because Tom Izzo talked about he was so upset at, you know, the team's play against Northwestern. Again, they had to go to overtime to beat Northwestern. And Tom was so upset at that game that he said, I never get this quote, too. He said, quote, "This team will look like an entirely different team come Maryland." And Alex, the team looked the same against Maryland, to be honest with you. So again, now I understand. I get it. It's early. Don't get me wrong. But what can you harp on positively that gives you a peek into the window that this team is going to get it together? Because right now, these are the same problems that I'm seeing and the same problems I've been seeing all year against the big dogs.
But Al, Let's look at it this way. You can kind of expect after last year that there would be some issues going into this year.
Certainly.
Certainly. Now, after watching the Indiana game with stifling defense, you couldn't believe
that.
Great defense.
Best game all year.
Is that not a good sign of what this team can do?
Right. And this is the thing. When Michigan State, I feel as though this is more mental than anything. Free throws are mental. Effort is mental. Michigan, I'm not seeing any type of awareness or any type of get up for Michigan State when coming out of games. And again, it hurts my eyes to watch Michigan State run a half court set because it seems as though, first of all, there's no go-to guy. there, and if you look at it, and looking at the numbers here, Matt Costello was Michigan State's most efficient player throughout that entire game. Anytime Costello is your most efficient player throughout a game, there are some problems on this squad, Alex. There are some problems that need to be worked out. And again, you can't miss layups, though. You can't miss free throws. Easy layups and easy free throws. How many times did we see Brandon Dawson go up point blank and just blow point blank shots throughout that game? That comes down to the mentality of a team.
That's the cynical side of it. You could look at it and say, okay, Costello's scoring. That just means they have too many scorers on the team.
No,
that means they just don't have a go-to guy.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
What I'm saying is you said that anytime you have Costello scoring, if Costello's the guy that's leading the team, that's a problem.
Because Costello is not known for offensive efficiency.
He's not known for it.
Travis Trice has been the guy tearing it up, and this guy goes 2-for-8. Trimble takes him completely out of his game. Again, these are problems that are more mental to me, Alex. Once this team gets it up, clicks with the big muscle between the ears, this team, sky's the limit for him. But right now, I am seeing way too many mental mistakes happen on this team right now.
Yeah,
there's
mental mistakes, but I don't think not having a go-to guy is the issue. That's all I'm saying.
That's
one of the problems. I don't think having a go-to guy is
a problem. I just named numerous things. Free throws, defense, coming out aggressive. There are multiple areas on this team that are not clicking. And with all of those coming to a head, Michigan State is struggling in games that they frankly shouldn't struggle in, Alex. That's all I'm saying right now. And if they don't get it together right now, and Travis Trice talked about it. I was listening to the presser, and Matt Charbonneau, the Detroit News, asked Tom Izzo about how Travis Trice said he just doesn't want this to get out of control because he doesn't want one loss to lead to another loss to lead to another loss. This team has to get its mojo back from a confidence standpoint. And right now, I'm not seeing it. I'm just not seeing it. Folks, what do you think? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know, there was also another team in action on the hardwood from the land of the green and white, and that happened to be Susie Merchant and the MSU women's basketball team. They showed a lot of fight against a very, very talented Iowa team. Here was my report from the Breslin Center yesterday.
It was the highest attended Michigan State women's basketball game this season as the Spartans find themselves coming up just a bit short to one of the big dogs in the Big Ten, the Iowa Hawkeyes. Now, it's also a sideline that today revealed a lot of emotion from head coach Susie Merchant, who does admit that she is finding it a bit challenging as to what to say to a team who's gone through such a roller coaster type of a year.
Oh. So right there, I don't know. Like, I don't know always what to say to them in the locker room, you know, for the first time. Like, sometimes it's about rebounding. Sometimes it's about toughness. Sometimes it's about execution. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, they're doing everything they can to be right where they need to be, and it's just not coming up in the win column, and I feel for them.
She's just kind of lost for words because we know and we're right there. We just can't get over the hump type of thing. It's like our last couple games that we've lost, we've been like within like what, three or four points. So it's just, I don't know, it's hard.
Things aren't looking that great for postseason, but you know, you're never dead because of the Big Ten tournament. So you can never lose hope. You want to keep playing, like play it out, get what you can get, and then go from there.
I'm the most frustrated I've been for a group of people. Like, honestly, that's, you know, I've taken over programs that have had 7 scholarship players and haven't had a winning season in 13 years, and I had the first winning season and had to walk the ball up the floor and pack it in, and I've done all that, you know. So I feel confident. Like, that's what we're doing now. We're trying to find ways to give our team a chance to be in the game.
So what exactly is this team playing for now? Well, as you just heard, that depends on what player you talk to. But there is one consistency, and that's that everyone on this squad is trying desperately to look at the glass as half full rather than half empty. I'm Al Martin here at the Breslin Center in East Lansing, Michigan, for WKAR's Current Sports.
Yeah, again, you can check out that report right now. It is posted on WKAR.org. You can check it out and see the visual from that report. And I think the visual alludes to really the emotional state, I should say, of where this team is right now. As you just heard, hey, Susie Merchant's frustrated. Point blank, period. With everything that this team has gone through this season, from the injuries with certain players like Brandy Agee to Jasmine Hines to different ailments. One player had an ear infection before the start of yesterday's game, to the sudden news and, frankly, quote-unquote drama of Jasmine Lumpkin leaving the team. This squad has gone through a season that I have never seen Susie Merchant endure. And she admitted it. I mean, even the game prior to this one, you know, the Illinois game, Susie approached the podium and talked about in her 20-plus years of coaching, she has never gone through a season like this. But I tell you what, this team showed a lot of fight yesterday. Holding one of the Big Ten's best teams in Iowa to just 52 points, a team that averages the 13th most points in the entire nation, a team that is ranked in the top 25, and Michigan State holding this squad to 52 points and giving them themselves a chance to possibly even win that game was remarkable nonetheless. Seven players, seven healthy bodies is what Susie Merchant has on that squad. Five starters, two coming off the bench. They've even gone to as far as trying to pick the litter of other women's teams from around campus to just give this team another extra body. It's unbelievable to see how this team, after games, and again, I talked to Ariel Powers and Becca Mills, and I talked to Tori Jankowska and talked to her about the season. I mean, it's remarkable to talk to those individuals and to evaluate their demeanor after games and to see that they still have a smile on their face and they still think positive. And you heard from Becca Mills right now. I mean, they still believe that they can make the tournament and they still believe that the door that could put them in there would be the Big Ten tournament. So, again, it's just remarkable to see that this team is not giving up. I agree with Susie. Susie talked about last week how this team is in desperate need for a point guard, without a doubt, because, you know, when you have such an offensive juggernaut in players like Ariel Powers, in players like Tori Jankowska, I mean, they're bona fide scorers, without a doubt. They can put the ball in the bucket. But just imagine if this team had a point guard to facilitate and feed that talent. I mean, just imagine what could happen. And, you know, I ran into Susie, actually, when I was doing that report at the Breslin Center. Susie and I crossed paths, and you could just see, kind of see the frustration on her. I've never seen Susie Merchant this distraught about a year. Never seen her like this. And she we kind of talked briefly after she had approached the podium, just one-on-one for about 10 minutes, and she voiced just the concerns that she had of this squad. And one of the glaring quotes from our discussion that I will talk about is just – Her competitiveness. Susie Merchant is one of the most competitive individuals you'll ever meet in your life. And even with everything that has gone through this season, she still believes that this squad should be better than what it is and should be winning more than it is. And she's so hard on herself. And one of the glaring things she said, that, quote, this is Michigan State. And she kind of looked at me after she said that. How Michigan State demands greatness, especially on the hardwood, looking at the incredible track record that this school has when it comes to the game of basketball. And, you know, she's going through a lot right now. But, hey, you can only, you know, do so much. You know, trying to turn lemons into lemonade can be tough sometimes when you're dealt the insurmountable cards that she has been dealt this year. So now they play Maryland, top dog in the Big Ten. They're going to play Wisconsin, who's right in the middle of the pack. And Indiana, who's number 10 in the Big Ten. The big question right now is, can we put this team on the bubble? What do you think? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Folks, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll have weekend winners for you. We'll also talk about Max Scherzer signing a hefty deal, to say the least. And we'll also talk about that incredible, incredible championship weekend in the NFL. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Ooh, Lorna, trouble so hard. Don't nobody know my trouble, but God. Don't nobody know my trouble.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I want to remind you all that this Wednesday, yes, 2 days from now, Current Sports TV will be taping just like we do each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. I'll be sitting down with a living legend, a legend when you talk about Michigan sports, high school sports, I should say. Yeah, well, Michigan sports for that matter as well. Bob Anderson actually just recently broke the record for most high school basketball games coached by any coach in the history of this state. Yes, folks, he's been with Ithaca for a long time. He is right now the Ithaca girls basketball coach, but Bob Anderson will be joining me to talk about that remarkable accomplishment, some of his favorite memories, some of his favorite players and teams throughout his entire tenure of being on the sidelines, and so much more. If you want to meet Bob, or if you even know him and want to attend that episode, just simply go to WKAR.org. And again, that's WKAR.org to sign up online for free and be a part of that live studio audience. All right, folks. Well, each and every Monday, we love to take a look back at the weekend that was in sports and bring to you our weekend winners. Who exactly had the best weekend in sports these past 2 days? Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
Gosh, do I love that intro music to Weekend Winners, I tell you. All right, folks, well, it's time for Weekend Winners right here on Current Sports, where we take a look back at the weekend that was in sports and bring to you who we thought who had the best weekend in the sporting world. Alex, who should do the honor? Should I start or I'll start? Here we go. Max Scherzer, folks. I got to start with Mad Max. Folks, he got what he wanted here. Free agent pitcher Max Scherzer has agreed to a 7-year contract with the Washington Nationals. Now, the deal, get this, is worth $210 million with half deferred. Scherzer reportedly will receive $15 million annually for the next 14 years. That's unbelievable. Now, the deal also includes a record $50 million signing bonus. That's just unbelievable. I mean, that is through the roof, off the charts numbers right there. I mean, Max, hey, can you throw some of those dollar bills to us here at WKAR? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? He actually turned down a $144 million offer from the Tigers, which expanded to 6 years. And you know what? Max has been waiting on this. You know, it's initially why he turned down that initial offer that the Tigers threw at him is because, hey, he wanted to be paid like one of the best in the game and felt as though, I mean, I'm not saying that $144 million does not put you as being paid as one of the best in the game, because it certainly does, but, you know, he wanted to be paid as one of the top one or two players and pitchers, I should say, in the MLB, and he certainly does that with this deal. Now, if you look at Max's numbers, I mean, for his career, I mean, he's 91-50 with a 3.58 ERA in 7 seasons with, of course, Arizona and the Detroit Tigers. 2013 AL Cy Young Award winner, has made the All-Star team in each of his two past seasons. I mean, that's pretty good. That's solid numbers, folks. I had a relatively decent year this year. I thought he could have pitched a little better, but not a bad year that he's coming off of. And, you know, the Nationals are looking for a big, big arm, and they get it with Max. So, you know, it's just funny when you see stories like this because, again, Max is a guy who initially turned down it. And, you know, a lot of people criticized him. A lot of people laid down the hammer on Max and said, you have to be out of your mind to turn down $144 million. And, you know, the fact that he went through a year where, you know, ideally it was a year that he had the spotlight on him to prove that he was worth that money or even more. And, you know, he goes out there, finishes the year, and now he's staring at a $210 million contract. Unbelievable stuff. Now, it's also reported that the Tigers are possibly interested in James Shields. Huh, how about that? So to sort of soften that blow that they now have, obviously, at the pitching mound. So, in looking at James Shields, I mean, he made at least 30 starts, thrown at least 200 innings. I mean, he's a solid arm as well, one of the studs in the league. So we'll see, and we'll keep you posted in the coming days if that deal goes through as well. Also, I have another weekend winner here. I want to shout out Deontay Wilder. Now, does that name ring a bell at all? If it doesn't, that's because, well, be frank with you, the game of boxing hasn't been relevant in America, probably dating back to the Mike Tyson era. But Deontay Wilder is changing that and changing it very quickly. He defeated Bermain Stuyvesant over the weekend, who was the previous holder of the WBC Heavyweight Championship. Deontay Wilder wins the fight by decision and becomes the first heavyweight American champion in the sport of boxing since 2006. How about that? Deontay Wilder, in a pretty cool moment, if you caught any of the highlights of that fight, you know, it was funny because he was yelling at the crowd, "Who can't box? Who can't box?" Of course, talking about Americans, because, again, there hasn't been an American title holder in the heavyweight division dating all the way back into 2006. So Deontay Wilder carried the flag, my man. That's pretty impressive stuff. Also, got to bring up the game that was for the Seattle Seahawks. Wow. I mean, you talk about the heart of a champion. I mean, that was an unbelievable series of events that took place in the second half of that Seattle Seahawks and Green Bay Packers game. Seattle becomes the first defending champion to make the Super Bowl in 10 years, folks. In 10 years. That's the last time we talked about this happening. We haven't had a back-to-back champion in that long. That's unbelievable. Now, you know, and it's moments in games like that. I always talk about in championship games how the little things in a game get amplified times 200. And for me, the turning point that really, really caused a huge leak in the boat happened to be Brandon Bostic muffing that onside kick. The ball hits him right in the face mask. Seattle recovers. And we all know what happened after that. I mean, that's unbelievable. How about them Seahawks, huh? Now, the health of Aaron Rodgers was also something that I also wanted to pay attention to throughout that game. I did feel as though that possibly if Aaron Rodgers was 100%, maybe we talk about a different outcome here. But a lot of there's only so much you can do offensively. It's not like Aaron Rodgers is playing both sides of the ball. The defense for the Packers just kind of just went agent zero. I mean, they went ghost. Russell Wilson, a guy who battled through adversity that entire game, actually had a zero QBR rating at halftime. He had four interceptions, arguably the worst game in his entire NFL career at such a crucial moment in the playoffs. I mean, how about that? And he comes back, brushes it off, has a short memory, and leads his team to victory. My goodness. And those five giveaways, I tell you what, those five giveaways are actually the most in the Pete Carroll era, which dates back, of course, to 2010. Marshawn Lynch was the most consistent thing. Beast Mode was the most consistent thing on that team all game. 157 yards on 25 carries. Again, Russell Wilson's numbers, 209 yards, one touchdown, four interceptions, and they still win that game. Alex, how about that game? I mean, when you look at this, I mean, Green Bay initially had the game. And then to see what happened in that second half, have you ever seen a game like that? That was crazy. You actually watched it. I couldn't watch it.
Oh, yeah, I watched it. And here's the thing about Bostic. Okay, there were some other drops in that game. There was a big third down, too, when the Packers were driving the ball late in the fourth, and the receiver dropped the ball. It kind of went right through his hands again. Now, if you're Bostic, yeah, it kind of muffled off his face mask, but it's wet. It's Seattle. You're up like 3 feet in the air going for a jump ball. I mean, you can't put all the blame on Bostic. Yeah, I hear.
Oh, I'm not. I'm not doing that.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to, you know, just listeners out there who do. And there is a perception out there.
I haven't heard
that. Did you see Twitter? I mean, Twitter was blown up. Oh, Bostic got a feel for the guy.
He definitely messed up.
Cost the season for the Packers. But here's the thing. You can't fault that all on Bostic. I mean, that's as much as it went right through his hands and hit his face smack. I mean, you try being in Seattle in the winter and trying to catch a ball like that. You know, I mean, it's probably a lot harder than what it seems. Do you agree?
Yeah. Oh, no, I definitely agree with you. I mean, I think that the man should have caught the ball without a doubt. I mean, anytime it hits you right in the face and you can't make that play, definitely. But to put a loss like that on one man's shoulders, that's a collective screw up. as a team. I mean, the defense wasn't there again. The defense was terrible in the late stretches of that game. And again, there were just key moments that they just did not make plays. So hats off, though, to Seattle. Definitely one of my weekend winners. Also want to shout out Lindsey Vonn, American skier. Folks, she has become the most decorated women's skier that the sport has ever seen. How about that? She actually won her 63rd World Cup win, which puts her at numero uno when it comes to World Cup wins. And how about Tiger Woods, her boyfriend, good old Tiger Woods, showing up and showing her some love? How about that? It's funny because if you saw the picture of Tiger, he actually had on a ski mask. He had some glasses on. He had a hoodie on. And he walks through the crowd. Nobody knows it's Tiger Woods until he goes up and gives his girlfriend, Lindsey Vonn, a big smooch to congratulate her on that 63rd World Cup win. How about that? Congrats to Lindsey Vonn. And I cannot conclude a weekend winners without talking about the red, white, and royal blue, my Detroit Pistons. How about that? They beat the Pacers. They beat the 76ers. They get their seventh straight road win. The Pistons are still fully focused, man. How about them? Got to shout out the Detroit Pistons. Stan Van Gundy is doing a great job. And pretty soon here, the Pistons may be knocking on that eighth seed spot. So to make the playoffs. I truly think the Pistons can be, when it's all said and done, I think they will be a 5 seed in the playoff, folks, if they keep riding this momentum. All right, folks, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will really commemorate the holiday that is Martin Luther King Day by talking about a historical moment when it comes to breaking racial barriers right here in athletics at Michigan State University. Tom Shanahan, we'll have a throwback interview for you. He's written a book on the great Jimmy Ray. You don't want to miss that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Happy MLK Day, folks. Hopefully it's a relaxing one and a time for us all to reflect on becoming better human beings, folks. Hopefully you're having a good one, though. Let's transition now to commemorate this incredible holiday. I want to throw back to an interview that took place on the heels of last year, actually, with a fantastic author, MSU alumni, Tom Shanahan. Fantastic writer, folks. He has a book called The Ray of Light, which sort of recounts the incredible era of course, the Gene Washingtons, the Bubba Smiths of the MSU football world, and yes, the first African-American quarterback right here at Michigan State University, the great Jimmy Ray. A fantastic book. I actually had a chance to preview the book before it was even released on bookshelves everywhere. So I sat down with Tom to talk about this incredible story and his time actually putting together this book.
A pleasure to be here. First saw you when I was back here for the Spartan Sports Journalism Classic.
Yes.
You got introduced a couple years ago, and then I wanted to say hello last year, but Jack Ebling had me on his show, and I missed you.
Finally
catching up with you.
Finally, we are catching up, Tom, and it's great, you know, talking with you. And we talked a little bit before we took the air today about this incredible piece of work that will be released, I believe, September 4th. Am I right?
Correct.
September 4th. It's entitled Ray of Light. And it really dives into the integration of college football and also the 1965-66 Michigan State football team, an era which really broke down the barriers when it comes to integration, not only in Michigan State football, but also in just in today's game, college game in general. Where did the inspiration, first time to start the discussion, where did the inspiration come for you to write Ray of Light?
Well, we moved here, my family, to Big Rapids. My dad was a professor at Ferris State in 1964. So I was a kid when those great 65, 66 teams came along. So I've been a Michigan State fan since I lived in the state.
Only
applied to one college, Michigan State.
That's it, no other.
Yeah.
Nice.
Got accepted, so I didn't bother with anything else. And I've always, you know, I always knew as a kid that there was something unusual about this football team, a black quarterback. Nobody else has a black quarterback and so many black players, but I was too young to understand the social significance. But it's always been with me. And as I got older, I wondered, well, you know, there's Jimmy Ray, there's Bubba Smith, there's George Webster, there's Dean Washington. The last three are all in the Hall of Fame. You know, those are all guys from the South, and they're all stars for Duffy on his Underground Railroad. But there had to be more to it than that, because nobody goes 4-for-4 or 7-for-7, whatever you want to say the All-American count was for Duffy's players from the South.
Mm-hmm.
So there had to be more to it. And I decided, I got to know Jimmy Ray's son, Jimmy Ray III, who is now a vice president with the Colts.
So you met Jimmy Ray's son first.
Yeah, I was out in San Diego, and I was writing out there, and Jimmy Ray's son was vice president with the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
And got to talking with him, and he told me that his dad and the teammates always felt that they were the champions, the national champions, despite that tie with Notre Dame. And
right.
So I saw this as my opportunity to dig into this idea I've always had about what was the Underground Railroad. And Jimmy III introduced me to his dad, and we went from there. His dad was he was eager to get this story told, too.
He was. That's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, when you came in contact with Jimmy Ray and, you know, kind of tossed this idea around about putting this book together, I mean, how willing was Jimmy Ray to really tell this story?
Yeah, very willing. All the guys were very willing. And Bubba Smith and George Webster, of course, passed away, but Gene Washington and Clinton Jones is from Cleveland, but still
right.
He was part of those teams. All these guys were very willing to talk about it. And what I found out from my research was the missing link was that when Duffy had a network in the South, Minnesota had a couple guys from the South, Illinois had a couple guys from the South, but those were all anecdotal contacts where somebody knew somebody and that player made their way north. Duffy actually had a network in the South, across the South. He recruited 44 players, black players from the South from 1959 to 1972.
Wow.
And they represented 10 of the 13 states in the South. So he was known all throughout the South. And the reason for that was when he first became a national figure in the late 50s, after that first Rose Bowl, he got invited to clinics around the country. And when he went to the South, he was disturbed that there were no black coaches allowed to attend the clinic. And so subsequently, he would fulfill his obligation with the clinic for the whites-only clinic, but he put on his own clinic just for the black high school coaches. And he did it for the coaching fraternity. This is what Hank Bulla and Vince Carroll had told me. They're the only two coaches still alive from those staffs. He said
right.
Duffy was just doing it because he loved being around coaches, and he loved the coaching fraternity. Well, these coaches came to trust Duffy, and they started to say, hey, I got this player for you.
So that's how it began, with him putting on this clinic for the black coaches who weren't allowed to attend the other clinics. They start to develop trust and start to develop a rapport, I guess, with Duffy, opening the door for him to sort of pick into their litter of players. Then, huh?
Exactly. And then the other pieces to that is Michigan State already had a reputation for black athletes. Jesse Jackson talks about how watching the Rose Bowl with Michigan State in it, with Leroy Bolden and returning a – I think it was Leroy that returned the punt for a touchdown. The black Americans were very cognizant that this was an integrated football team where black athletes had a chance. And they always thought about Michigan State as a place. The very first passenger on the Underground Railroad was Clifton Rofe. He's from Arkansas. And his high school coach understood that Duffy Doherty played black players. And he was able to make contact with Duffy Doherty and ask him if he'd take a look at his player. Well, Clifton Rofe came up to Michigan State in 1959 and had to ride a segregated train up from until he crossed into the north in Illinois, and then he could switch cars.
Right.
And Clifton Rofe never played. He hurt his knee, never played a down for the Spartans. But he says he's indebted to the people of Michigan State because he escaped the South, graduated, and he just recently retired as a dentist after 40 years.
Wow.
And oh, by the way, his son is Willie Rofe, the Pro Football and College Football Hall of Famer.
Ah, gotcha. Wow. Just to put that into context, folks. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Tom Shanahan. Tom, of course, an MSU journalism alumni, has a pretty interesting book concerning the integration of college football and, of course, that 1965-66 legendary Michigan State football team. The book is entitled Ray of Light, will be out in September, September 4th, to be exact. And to put into context really quickly, Tom, on just how integral the Michigan State football program and Duffy was to integrating blacks in the game of football. I mean, to compare to other schools up here in the North.
Yeah.
I mean, were there any other schools doing this?
Well, like I said, everyone had a handful of players, but nobody openly recruited black players just because they were good players.
Right.
Not because they had some kind of quota or whatever. They recruited, Duffy recruited the best players he could find, and a lot of those players were black players in the South that didn't have a chance to play anywhere else.
Right.
And then the other element that made it work here at Michigan State is John Hanna was all for integration. He was pushing integration all along. So it's not like Duffy had to worry about his president and didn't want him recruiting so many black players from the South.
He so that all, helps, too. Yeah.
And the pieces all fit together here at Michigan State in the 1960s. And then this is another important point. Jesse Jackson talked about how he was a big fan of Jimmy Ray because he was a quarterback. And there were no black quarterbacks in that era. And they just felt that it was important for all those black athletes, Bubba Smith, Jimmy Ray, Gene Washington, George Webster, they didn't have to be out protesting for the civil rights movement. They were making a significant contribution just by being seen on TV, read about in the newspapers. Mm-hmm. And a couple of perfect examples of that is, let me go back one step further. A couple of perfect examples of that is Jimmy Ray was from Fayetteville, North Carolina, never dreamed he could play in the Big Ten. And he was a three-year starting quarterback at his high school. Mm-hmm. His sophomore year, he's watching the Rose Bowl, and that was the year Minnesota won with Sandy Stevens, who was the first black All-American quarterback. He was from Uniontown, Pennsylvania.
Right.
And he's watching the Rose Bowl, and Sandy Stevens gets introduced at the beginning of the show, and Jimmy sees it's a black guy. He didn't know Sandy Stevens was black.
Didn't know at all until that moment. Wow.
And from that point, Jimmy started thinking he could play Big Ten football. And
just being seen like that, seeing exactly. Someone else that looks like you on that type of stage just does so much as far as that inspiration goes.
It's hard for people to understand what segregation was back like that.
Right.
But that's what Jimmy thought. He would never have a chance. And then you take that another step further, Tony Dungy, his father was earning his PhD at Michigan State, and he was living on campus and going to Michigan State games when Tony was playing. And Tony Dungy wrote the foreword for this book. And Tony says it was so amazed him to see a black quarterback that when he and his buddies played football in the backyard, he was Jimmy Ray.
Wow, he was Jimmy Ray. That's who he looked up to. Yeah, that's who Tony Dungy looked up to.
He wasn't some guy in the NFL. He was Jimmy Ray.
Oh, boy, that speaks volumes to the impact that that those who are a part of this unbelievable movement had during that time. Unbelievable stuff. For you, when looking at this book, I mean, you tossed out some names like Jesse Jackson and, of course, Jimmy Ray is entitled Ray of Life, for goodness sake, and all of these characters who had such an integral part during this era to integrate the game of college football. When compiling and sitting down with all these individuals, I mean, how tough was it was it tough at all to get all of them to sit down and talk to you about that time?
No, they're so proud of what they did here at Michigan State and the opportunity that Duffy Doherty gave them. Jimmy talks about how courageous Duffy Doherty was to play him as a black quarterback because he knows the hate mail that Duffy received.
Right.
And they're just so grateful for the opportunity they received here because they wouldn't have received it in any other place. And certainly as not as a group like they had. There was 20 black players on the 1966 team. 11 of them were starters. Now, that doesn't sound like very much. But when they played Notre Dame in the game of the century, 1-2.
Yeah.
Notre Dame had one black player, Alan Page.
That says a lot.
And most of the schools only had 3, 4, 5 black players. USC, when they won their national championship in 1967, you know, USC has a history of integration.
Right.
1967, they only had 7 black players.
So MSU had a far above heels players than them.
20 was off the charts.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, and it just started, and it led step by step to more schools giving more black athletes opportunities.
And, you know, when talking with you, Tom, before we took the air today, something that really amazes me when looking at this era and talking to these different players, these different African-American players who Duffy recruited and brought onto the Michigan State football team, I would think, you know, just sitting and just thinking about and letting that thought marinate on your mind, that I would think that during that time, they would you know, those black African-American players would come in contact with some sort of backlash from the public. I mean, because racism was certainly still going through the roof at that time, and to see something like this that hadn't been seen in any other program in the North, I mean, but what's amazing is that you told me that when talking with these different players like Clinton Jones and Gene Washington and so on and so forth and Jimmy Ray, they didn't receive any backlash from anybody, really.
Right. The only time there would be a problem is if maybe they went off campus for housing and things like that. But as long as they were in the campus environment, they said it was an oasis.
And why do you think that is so?
I think it started with John Hanna, that the faculty, I quote one of the prominent faculty members, Richard Lewis, who said that John Hanna was for integration, and it was obvious to everyone on the faculty. They knew it. It pervaded the campus.
Right.
And so everyone is accepting of this attitude. And there just weren't incidents. When Clinton Jones went into the Hall of Fame in 2012, I came back for that. That was part of my research. And Clinton had told me this story earlier, but he also was asked it at the press conference.
Right.
A reporter said, well, surely, you know, everything was great on the team, but surely he had problems with the students. And Clinton said, no, I never had any problems.
No problems with the students at all either.
And then he said, I'll take that back. And this is in my book. And I wanted him to be quiet because I didn't want him to tell this story until it was in the book. But but nobody picked up on it. Everybody let that story go.
Yeah.
And Clinton said, I take that back. There was one thing. Clinton was voted Mr. MSU his sophomore year in the spring.
Yeah.
And first time a black man had been Mr. MSU. And,
wow.
And Clinton says, I don't know how this happened, but I got voted Mr. MSU. and then there was Miss MSU, who was a white woman, and she wouldn't dance with Clinton at the ball, which was the custom.
Oh, she wouldn't. Yeah. Okay. So that was the one incident that he had.
And that's the only one Clinton mentions, and it still breaks his heart to this day. I write in the book, it's like he wishes he could wipe that one single incident from otherwise a blissful experience here.
That's an unbelievable story right there, Tom. So, you know, Tom, when talking with these different players like Clinton and Gene and so on and so forth, I mean, how thankful were they to Duffy about all the doors that he opened here at Michigan State for them?
Oh, very grateful. They say that everything that they've accomplished in their life is because of Duffy.
All right, yeah, that's my throwback interview with Tom Shanahan, the author of a fantastic, fantastic book entitled Ray of Light that recounts Jimmy Ray, the first African-American quarterback here at Michigan State University for the football team. I just wanted to look back at the interview. When you talk about MLK, of course, you talk about the progress, especially of African-Americans in this nation. That from an athletic perspective that hits home right here in mid-Michigan, that story certainly does. Again, you can get that book by simply going to Amazon.com and simply Googling Ray of Light. How about that? So also, we got 1 minute left in the show. Want to give a shout out to our two fantastic students who came in on a day that they really didn't have to. MLK Day. I'm sure a lot of you are off work. A lot of students don't even have to go to class. Class is canceled, of course, on MLK Day. But they decided to come in and work for us here today. Madeline Carino and Ben Stram. Shout out to them, folks. They are superstars. And also want to note the Pistons and Hawks. They play at 2:35 p.m. Should be a good game there. And again, Bob Anderson, my guest on Current Sports TV this Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Go to WKR.org to sign up online and be a part of that studio audience. All right, folks. Well, thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.